Hello, sacred beings. Before hopping into today's interview, we'd like to drop a gentle trigger warning at the top of the episode, as this ep does mention and go into detail about sexual trauma, abuse, rape, and the healing of these experiences. Please use your best discretion and feel free to skip this episode if it's not supportive to where you're at in your healing journey at this time. Hello, sacred beings. Welcome to Sacred Sister Podcast. Join us as we normalize the magic and sacralize the mundane.
Expanding consciousness and deepening awareness to support you in leading a life full of healing, meaning, and magic.
I'm your host, Britt Lynn, energetic cartographer and personal transformation coach.
I'm your host, Tana Lina, a certified astrologer, rebirth coach, and sorceress.
If you're brand new here, welcome, beloved. We are so grateful, so happy to have you here. If you're a seasoned sacred being, welcome back. Thank you so much for your support, for your listenership, and we look forward to seeing you in the show.
Let's dive in. Welcome everyone to Sacred Sister Podcast, another episode here. We are so excited to have you all here, and we're so looking forward to this juicy conversation I feel like we're going to have with Peyton. Thank you, Peyton, for being here. Peyton is a sensual artistry priestess, and she's going to share with us her journey from being a sex worker to really healing her feminine powers and now stepping into this place to embody other women through her sensual artistry. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's such an honor.
Yeah, we'd love to even around here, it's customary to just ground down for a couple minutes and really sink into the presence of this now moment before deep diving into, I'm sure, what's going to be a very juicy conversation today. So we would love to turn the floor over to you and be guided in your magic.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Such an honor, such a gift to be here with you guys, to serve, hopefully, and just share in our essence and who we are. So I'll go ahead and invite us inward just to close our eyes. Breathe all the way down into your womb space. Just filling it up with light, imagining each breath is filled with this healing frequency that you're bringing down to your womb. Letting it be fully surrounded by your breath, filled up with your breath. And every time you exhale, just letting go of all the disempowerment that we might be feeling right now, all the stories, all the suffering that you may be carrying in your womb, anything that's not in service to your highest creativity, your highest path. You don't have to identify it. You don't have to know what it is. Just know that you are releasing it every time you exhale. You are that powerful. You are that sovereign. Just breathing into your womb space, knowing that you have sovereign choices on what you get to keep here. And I'm inviting you to keep your dreams here. Let them come through this magic portal that's your womb. Just continue to exhale what's not serving you. And inhale that healing frequency and start to bring it all the way down into your pussy. Relax your pussy, relax your butthole. Know that it's safe for you to be grounded. It is safe for you to receive. It is safe for you to be in your womanity. This could be an energetic pussy too. It could be your lingam. Just breathing into that space. Know that you are the bridge between heaven and earth. All these sacred visions in your womb get to come through you. They get to be birthed through you. You are a creative creatrix queen. And just letting yourself come into the space that surrounds you. Feel your heart, your hands, the air on your face, and the surface beneath you. And then start to come back into this shared space with each other, with this podcast, with your day, and know that you're carrying this healing energy with you as you go forth. Your dreams are with you as you go through the rest of your day. Take action from that place. So when you're ready, you can open your eyes. There's no rush.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was out. I was feeling like, whoa, it's like tears about to like be collected in my eyes. And yeah, it's just such a powerful piece when we connect with our womb. And especially even right now in the collective, what is moving through, you know, what is going on right now in regards to women's empowerment and in regards to our choices that we have with our body and with our womb. And I feel that so deeply within my own life as well. And I'm excited to be talking about that with you. Because it's this feeling of these expectations that are placed on us as women. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to hear more about your journey and your past as a sex worker and how you've come to this place now of deep healing of those wounds and also the shame that you felt around it. And now you're in this place of empowerment and you really own your past and you know that it served you and you chose that for a reason. And so it feels like now from this place of who was I in the past? I kind of want to disconnect from that to like, no, let me fully own my story and show up as who I am authentically. So yeah, please share about your journey and how it all began for you, your spiritual awakening, and how your life was before the awakening.
Wow. I really like how you worded that. It's really just so on point with my journey. There's pieces already that like you haven't actually like, I don't think seen, but were very present on that journey of like how much I did disassociate from that version of myself, to the point where I even went by a different name for like many years. I went by the name Aurora. And I know a lot of people like change their names, but for me, it was like kind of a disassociative thing of like, let me forget about who I was prior to my spiritual awakening. And yeah, there was a point in my journey where I had to like reclaim my name, and yeah, it was a whole thing. So I like that you kind of spoke to the disassociation piece, because I know that that's something a lot of people go through, like where they don't want to own their past or who they've been. And that's, you know, their own journey to go through. I don't know that that's like something to necessarily bypass, but it is something to like come to peace with at some point. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I feel like the name, the me disassociating from it did serve me for a while until it really didn't. And then I was like, oh, I can feel all this stuff now. I'm capable because now I have the tools. Which versus like back when I was being a sex worker, I didn't have any tools besides like my bath rituals. I always took baths when I would come back from the strip club, just like come take a bath and shower and be like, that never happened. And but yeah, besides that, I didn't have any tools that I have now, and like any support or like any like real community. So I feel like if someone's disassociating, and they don't have those things, I feel like it's okay in a way, if that makes sense. Not like it's like the goal or anything, but yeah, I feel like even the disassociation was like a good part of my journey.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I can totally understand that. And I think it is, it's almost like it's like a coping mechanism, right? To like just even be able to move through it and be okay. Because it's a traumatic experience for the soul.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So what do you want to know? I haven't actually like, talked about that. I haven't like talked about this too much or shared it too much. So I'm like, oh, how do I like,
how
do you want me to take you from the beginning? Or like,
take us on a ride.
Yeah, take us on a ride. Like, okay, so I'll free flow and see what happens. So I'll tell you how I got into sex work and kind of some of my patterning behind it, because I feel like knowing this has given me a lot of compassion, like kind of having this like bird's eye view and just like seeing how much innocence was in my sex work, because it was like, you were just doing the best you could. You were in survival, like in a way. I had really learned this stuff from my parents. Like, you know, I love both my parents, but I definitely got some of my beliefs from them. And I like, so I like just knowing all of this, knowing that I didn't have any like healthy sexual examples, and that it did seem very normal for me to objectify or see women as objective. Or, you know, like kind of like overly sexualized. That's like kind of a form of currencies, the female body. And yeah, I watched it from both my parents and in their own way. And so my journey towards sex work actually happened after I moved out of my parents' house, my dad's house. My parents are divorced. So I moved out, and they were kind of like, you're going to fail. You're going to like not be okay. You're going to come running back here. And I was like, whatever, fuck you. I'm going to do great. Like then like 3 weeks into like moving out, like I had moved in with this girl I worked with, and she kicked me out of the apartment. I like got fired from the job I was working out. And as I was like coming home from that, she was like, oh, well, you can't come in here and like, I wasn't on the lease. All my stuff was in there. Everything I had, my car wasn't working at the time. I had like longboarded to work. I was like, what do you mean I can't come in? I was like, girl, I'm having a bad day. I need to go cry and like be in my bed, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, I'm sorry, you can't come in. And I was like, oh no. And like, I was so stubborn. I was like, fuck going back to my parents. No, not for me. And I had hit up my like ex-boyfriend and was like, hey, I'm in a pinch. Can you just like come pick me up? I need to figure out what to do. And then I had a friend who I knew was a stripper. She was a stripper and she had kind of like accidentally told me once, and I knew strippers made bank. And so I was like, hey girl, like, could you help me? Like, can I get a job as a stripper? And like, I need to make money like super fast, like super fast. And yeah, so like I went over there. She gave me some like stripper heels and some like lingerie and stuff. I picked out my stripper name. My first stripper name was Bobby. I wanted like to be like this edgy, like bad bitch, like kind of like tomboy, like who like danced to rock and roll. And it was cool. So I got to kind of like get into like my alter ego of Bobby and went to the club. The first day I made like $20. And and I was like, damn. But then the next day I went back. I also like ended up getting a job at like Jimmy John's, like the
best. Jimmy John's by day.
Yes. And so I worked at Jimmy John's through the day for a minute. And then I like went to the club the next day after my first day. And I made $900 in like a few hours. And I was like, okay. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And for a while I kept up the Jimmy John's thing for some reason. Then eventually I was like, this is dumb. I'm just going to go strip. Like, what am I doing at Jimmy John's? And then, yeah, so it was really empowering for me for a while. Like I would just like kind of brag to my friends about it and be like, yeah, man, I get paid to get sexy. And like, I work out, like I'm doing all this pull work. It's a workout. Like my legs were like jello the first days I'd like ever stripped. I was like, oh my God, this is no joke. My legs got ripped. And yeah, so for a while it really was an empowering thing for me. And then it just like, I don't know, like there was like this point like it where like it just started to become like really gross to me, like really degrading. There would just be like some weird instances. Like I'd go to like get tipped and like some guy would just like lick me up my body and I'd be like, oh man. Or like just people just like grabbing my boobs without asking. And just like how much entitlement was there for the men in my body was just so gross. And so I kind of like, I weaved in and out of it. Like when I say like I did sex work for 5 years, I kind of like weaved in and out. Cause like I, for example, I like fell in love with someone and they didn't want me to strip. And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to strip. And, yeah, then I like worked at Domino's during that time, delivery driving. Yeah. And then when that relationship ended, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go back to strip work, make bank again. And yeah, just pay for college and stuff. And so I kind of like, when I first started, it was like, I would strip a lot and just like shop a lot too. Like I spent the money as fast as I made it. Like I just spent so much money. Like I would go buy, I'd be like acting like a baller. I'd be like, yeah, I'll buy your dinner. Don't worry. Like to my friends and stuff. And just like, be like, yeah, I'm gonna go buy some lingerie. I had like a Victoria's Secret card and like built up credit that way. I'd spend like stupid amounts of money on lingerie. And, yeah, then, towards the end of it, like I'd only strip like just to meet my like basic needs, basically. Like towards the end of the month, I'd be like, okay, bills are about to be due. I'm gonna go strip. And so it kind of built this like weird scarcity pattern too. Like I'd kind of like wait till like I really needed money to go. And yeah, then I would go and like kind of be desperate and putting out like super desperate energy into the club. It was just attracting like weird shit. I also had sugar daddies. There was a few periods of sugar daddies, but the thing about sugar daddies is they want sugar. And I'd always kind of like, I was very manipulative in this way, like where I'd kind of like be like, oh, I'm on my period, like, no sex today. And like, I just like wouldn't have sex with them and like till they were kind of like, okay, like, I really want to have sex. Like, and I'd be like, kind of ghost them. Like, it was kind of messed up, honestly. So that was the sugar daddy portion where I'd go like on all these like really fancy like business dinners and stuff like that. And then I like wouldn't want to have sex with them. So That's how that happened. And then my last day of stripping was actually, I didn't know it was going to be the last day. I was sexually assaulted and it was so bad because like a couple months prior to the assault, I had been hosting these like mushroom ceremonies in my apartment, like full on like art installation mushroom ceremonies where I'd have friends over and I'd have it just so like, I called it like my mushroom palace. It was just like a fairy den. And I'd have like all my paintings displayed everywhere. And like, just, I would spend like bukus of money on like flowers and plants and cool lanterns with candles. And I would just like make it in fountains and I'd make it so pretty in there. And I was just having these like beautiful journeys and I was inviting friends over and like letting them do mushrooms with me in this space. And that was cool because I kind of like got to see some people just like have these like really profound experiences and like provide that for them. So while I was doing all that, I was kind of like, man, this stripping shit really doesn't like jive with me. Like it's something off about it, you know, like, So I was kind of like mapping out my way out. And then someone had told me, they were like, man, you would really like ayahuasca. You're doing all these mushrooms. Like you should look into ayahuasca. And I was like, oh, like as soon as it was said, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that ayahuasca. Like, I didn't know anything about it. But my soul was just like pulsating, drawn to it. And was like, I have to do this. And I got weaved into a community here that's local. It's a church. There's a church here and, kind of started to get interweaved into that, but I hadn't done it yet. But I knew that there was like things to do to prepare for it. So before you do ceremony, like you're supposed to be like celibate, no sex, no stimulants, basically like no coffee, no drugs, no marijuana, no alcohol. You got to eat clean. You got to eat a certain diet and stuff. And I literally was like, I'm going to do this. And so for 2 months, I was like practicing this stuff. And I had no idea how I was going to find a ceremony. And then I was raped. And then I was like, and it was so like, it wasn't like the first time I'd ever been like raped in my life, but it was like the most jolting because I knew because of how like convicted I was to like stay celibate and like not have sex. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh damn, this was like very much against my will. And like, I'd really like tried to stand up for myself. And it was like real powerful. And
So when you say, let me just interject here for a moment. When you say this wasn't the first time that you were raped, but the first time that you were aware of it.
Yeah.
Like how, what do you mean by that?
I guess I mean that it's actually like kind of common, like just times where I like maybe fawned or like froze and like didn't stand up for myself. And then it would just like happen. And then I would just kind of like move on and just like ignore that person and like, you know, like
and that was within the sex work or that was like a friend?
This was actually a Tinder date. So it was somebody I'd already gone on dates with and they were very gentlemanly and very like fit the like they were very nice and like they were handsome and shit, but something was off about them. And I just remember like it was also like they really guilt tripped me. Like the day they raped me, like they asked me if they could come over and massage me and stuff. And I had just gotten off work. And like I said, people had violated me at work. So like I remember like this guy tried to finger my butthole. I was giving him a dance and he like went whoop and like scratched my ass like all the way up there. And I was like, dude, what the fuck? And I just like left from the dance and I like, then I was like going home and he like reached out and was like, hey, how you doing? I was like, dude, I had a shitty day. Don't fucking talk to me, you know? And he was like, cool, let me come over and make it better. And then I felt like, you know, it kind of sounds nice. Like he kind of like guilt tripped me a little bit. It was like, you never hang out with me, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, yeah, fine, come over. And then he did. And then he did his thing. And then he left. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, this guy was bad news. And yeah. So it's kind of a traumatic story. I don't know how like in depth to like go into it and stuff. And
yeah, I can feel that. And I feel that this is something that many women are experiencing in some way or another. Like I know for myself, it was a huge like sexual liberation piece for me to really fully stand up and listen to my yoni and see if I really want to have sex right now or if I just do that to please.
Yeah, the fawn response, man. Yeah. It's so real. And like, so like for me too, the thing about my journey, I had also been like sexually assaulted by my stepbrother and it caused a lot of issues with my family, which is one of the reasons I moved out is because they didn't believe me. Mm. And the reason they didn't believe me is because I had a freeze response and a fawn response, which in their eyes, they think I should have screamed or like been like super crazy about it, but I just didn't have that reaction. And mm-hmm. so like, they didn't think that I reacted appropriately and therefore they didn't believe me. So So it's so crazy. Like, but it's, those two responses are so common. They're so common. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I'd fawn and how like sometimes I'll still see that energy. Like maybe if I'm like around like men and like maybe they like just even want to give me a hug that I didn't want. And like, sometimes I see myself like accept it and I'm like, like what the, like, I just feel so gross, violated. Like where I'm like, damn dude, you did not give me like the chance to eat. Like there's like, I need slowness. Like, you know, like, so I've been working with this archetype to help with this called the benevolent bitch. Cause I know a lot of women are like, oh, I don't want to be a bitch and I don't want to like rock the boat and I don't want to like, you know, be confrontational, but I'm like, no, that is your benevolent protector. Like you need to be a bitch. Like, and that's going to help you. That's going to save you. That's going to be nice for them too. Like unfortunately the men need to learn like how to approach women and like a lot of them are just like too fast and too hasty. And it's very much, in my opinion, a result of the porn industry and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they're used to like, oh yeah, that woman just wanted it right fast then now. And like quick, easy, you know, just like, it's not like that. Like, it's not like that at all. Like women need more slowness to fully open up to where you're going to have like, you know, your cervical orgasm and like where you're really going to feel pleasure, like slowness. Like, yeah. So that's my rant there.
Yeah. Oh. No, I don't even think it was so much of a rant. It was beautiful, everything that you were sharing. And I really want to commend you for being so vulnerable. Thank you for sharing yourself with us so openly. I want to touch on a couple things that are just really, really coming forward. First, about, I believe I've read that you have a Christian background. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like that adds such a beautiful, kind of just like, it's a beautiful detail for all of us to kind of witness, because when we think back to the Adam and Eve story, it's the meekness, it's the subservience, it's the being submissive to the husband. And this is part of what the building blocks of the patriarchal system is kind of founded upon. And it is so, I mean, I just to bring it in, I like always loved watching the Duggar family. Maybe some of you who don't watch TLC, it's like a family of a mom and dad, they're Baptist and they have like some 18 or 24 kids or something. It's wild.
Whoa!
And the mom, the mom would always talk about, no, it's It's not 32 kids and counting. Whatever. It's so many freaking kids. And but the mom, Michelle would always, she was the most meek, and she just always really reminded me of my mom. She would always say that it's a wife's duty to show up and be available for the man anytime the man wants it, because if they don't receive it from their wife, they're going to be inclined to find it elsewhere. And that is a part of the Christian sanctity of the marriage. And I know that I grew up with a really similar vein of, not even so much that it was taught to me, but just like a witnessing. And it's a really important part, I feel, to bring into this conversation, because there are reasons that we have these energetics flowing and that it's somewhat normal for us to submit in these ways. A lot of us who have grown up with either religious trauma or just being raised to not be very aware about sex and what sex is all about and sex dynamics and sexual intimacy dynamics. And it's just, so that's one piece. And then another is, I really want to thank you for being so open about this topic, because it brings a really beautiful multidimensionality and sense of nuance and complexity to this whole realm. I feel like a lot of times we can see someone who is like, yeah, I'm a sex worker. I used to be a sex worker. And it's like this automatic thing that's like, oh, you go, girl, and women's empowerment and your sexual liberation. And this is a beautiful depiction of like, yeah, there's a spectrum. There's a spectrum. And for some people coming into their incarnation, into their lifetime, it's like, maybe that's exactly a piece of their path that they really, really want to feel into, and just owning their body and allowing themselves to be seen and cultivating really immaculate boundaries for themselves. And, you know, who's to say? But then I feel like I have not really heard very often, at least in the spiritual sense, this type of story that's like, initially you go into it, ego's like, dope, I'm going to make a bunch of money. And then you kind of notice these scarcity attachments to the money and that you're kind of showing up for the money. I know that for a long time, I have like 18 years as a model. And for a large majority of my modeling career, I would atmosphere model, which is when you get hired to go and fill space at clubs. And we would go to, you know, dinner first and go to the club afterwards. And then a lot of times it'd be private parties. And sometimes they would have prostitutes there. And sometimes, you know, they would have like contests of like, you know, girls would walk away with like $10,000 because they would just be giving lap dances or taking their clothes off. And I was like crouching in the bathroom, scared stiff, because I was just such an innocent girl that didn't know what I was getting myself into. But all that's to say is just like how each and every one of us have a relationship with this scene of life, with this stage of life. So it really just makes me happy that we're having this conversation and that you are bringing this dimension to it that I feel like is probably going to be a first time for a lot of people to hear.
I feel like it's your Scorpio, like such a beautiful depiction of your literally like stellium in Scorpio of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 planet in Scorpio, and then 5 of them in the house of Scorpio. And Scorpio is so much about sexuality and that attraction and that magnetism. And I feel like, you know, as a priestess, you probably know the past as well, just as Mary Magdalene was seen as a prostitute. You know, like it was a different approach to sexuality in ancient times than it is now. It was coming more from a sacred, at least in regards to the temple, to the temple virgins, so to speak. It came from a more sacred space, a union with the divine. Do you want to share more about that too?
That
piece, because I feel like that is where really at least for me, I feel like that's where the beauty comes in, and probably also our memories, our past life memories from those moments. And then we come into this reality, into this modern time where sex, because of the porn industry, like you said, has been so disconnected from source, from the divinity, from how sacred it really is. And then it's like, oh, what are these men thinking to think that that's okay to treat someone like that and not see you as a goddess who is dancing in front of them, you know, rather like seeing that as like, oh my gosh, that is a goddess who is dancing the pole in front of me, and she's sexy and she's sensual and she's beautiful, and I'm going to honor her and I'm going to kiss the ground beneath her. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're hurting you and they're abusing you, you know? So it's such a different society that we're living in right now. And I think, and I wonder if you relate to the past sense of like the temple virgins, and how, you know, that might have even been like a past life memory of yours that brought you into the sex work.
Yeah, I actually have like a few different memories of it. I've even had Akashic records, but I remember this one time I was making love to my ex-partner, and like I remember having this orgasm, and it was like, dude, I was literally like in heaven. There was like this like chapel. It was like very angelic. There was like this chapel around me. Like, I'm very clairvoyant. There was like all this energy happening around us. And I remember just like receiving all these like codes from this other life I lived as a sexual teacher in Egypt. Mm-hmm. I would teach the women how to alchemize men's energy and how to give it to their blood and release that. And like, I just remember fully like remembering it in that moment, and also having some Akashic records readings, and ayahuasca as well has really taken me into like these other lifetimes as well. And it's like, it's something that I was kind of touching on this in the post where I was kind of like, yeah, I used to be a sex worker, where I was like, it could be beautiful. It really could. And like, I even feel like I could be open to certain sex work in this life again that involves men, but it would be like, it would take such an immense amount of consciousness and like alchemy and just like the reverence it would need. It's just like, it's not something I'm like ready for yet. And I don't even know that's not that I'm ready for it. I just don't feel like our society's there. I don't feel like they're there, and like, not like they couldn't get there, but it's just, yeah, I even see it around just conscious communities now where I'm like, wow, there's still like really unhealthy sexual energy in these conscious communities. And not that I'm excluded from that. Like, I still am constantly like working with my own sexual energy and like undoing like programs that like still teach me, that, you know, like where maybe I get hasty and stuff and don't take that time to slow down. And I'm like, whoa. And, you know, yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like there's a time and a place. I love entering this conversation too, because sometimes you want a sexy, hot fuck. I will speak for myself.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take it slow. I don't want to, you know, it's like, I think we kind of had this conversation with Sophia Sundari, who's another beautiful Tantra teacher, that we feel into different energies of the chakras within our lovemaking and the way that we want to interact with our partner. And, you know, I think it's such a beautiful, beautiful thing that we have such a diverse piece that we're able to feel into. We can feel into the upper chakras and really feel into a lot of energy work and the pressing and pulling of energy and the movement of it and focusing more on touch and having, you know, rose petal massages and just all these really beautiful, like, it's almost like extracurricular sensual activities of the feeding of fruit and the chocolate and whispering nothings into each other's ears and kind of like
the energetics of it. And then there are also these really, really beautiful primal
yes.
urges oh my God, yes. to feel into. And I sometimes I hear these conversations about like idealizing one or the other. And I'm just like, no, that still puts us in a box. That still makes something like more or higher or better or more spiritual or whatever than the yes. other. And I just am so, I'm like, no, we get to have it all. That's the point. mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm totally with you in that too. And I feel like, I've actually played around with, the elementals, like, you know, like that, like what you're talking about, like the kind of faster, like kind of like primal, like to me, that's like very fiery. Mm-hmm. And then like the water, I think would be like the slower, like sensual, and then grounded would be like kind of like more weight and pressing and more
mm-hmm.
earth
and mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, the holding and even things like binding and whatnot. Like I've been mm-hmm. wanting, I've been like begging my husband, and I think I'll have another conversation with him about it soon, but I've always wanted to experiment with that, like being bound and being tied up, and I've just never experienced that before. Oh yeah, you're into this.
Yes. Actually, when I was saying that, I've thought about like doing, like there's certain sex work that does appeal to me in this lifetime. It would be shibari work, tying people up and like taking them through these journeys of like the elements and just like just like really also just like teaching like really safe, empowered surrender.
Totally.
Just through the experience, not that I'd be like teaching something, but like just like kind of like giving them this like super safe container, especially women. Like I really would like love to offer that to women and just be like, hey, you're safe to surrender. And I have a mentor who's like a shibari healer, and she does work like this where she ties people up and takes them on these journeys. And I'll connect y'all.
Oh, I love hearing about this.
I think this is something that our society is so in need of, in providing sexual education, not from a point of, you know, let's talk about the diseases that you can get from sex, or let's show you the different positions that you do with sex, but rather what is the dynamics of sex? How can you relate to the other person? How can, what gives you pleasure? How can you feel into your different pleasure zones? How can you move the energy around in your own body? How can you help move the energy in your partner's body? What kind of journeys can you go on together? Mm. What kind of magic can you create together? I mean, there's so much that we are not being taught about sex in our society, thinking that, yeah, in order to have orgasms, there has to be physical intercourse, for example, or in order to have that deep intimacy, that has to be one way, like physical intercourse, just like as you, Britt, were saying, like, this is part of the woman's duty as a wife. Give your husband that's the physical intercourse. Otherwise, he's not going to be satisfied. And I think that is such a big piece also in regards to abortions. Like, we had almost 1 million abortions last year. And it's fascinating for me personally, how many women are in that place where they opened themselves up while they were in their fertile zone, which is 7 days in a month, and they opened themselves up to the man coming in, where it's like, you know, less than, I want to say like 0.1% is rape and incest and stuff. Obviously they didn't open themselves up to it. They were abused to it, but a vast majority of it came from the power of the woman saying yes to physical intercourse while they were in their fertile window. And while I'm all about, you know, your body, your choice, obviously, you know, there is a space and time for it. Mm. At the same time, we also have to talk about education, and education in regards to what, when am I fertile? Mm. That's a big piece. Huge. When am I fertile? How do I know that my body is fertile? How can I track my fertility? How can I not be dependent on synthetic birth control or condoms? How can I be even aware that I can still have intimacy with my partner without having physical intercourse?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, those are such big pieces. And then another piece, like, you know, there's herbs to like stop implantation from happening. Like, I feel like the conversation that we're having like so deeply, and what I'm hearing from you too, is like the need for sexual education, where women know more about their bodies. We have to know about, when are we even ready for sex? When do we say yes to sex? I wonder how many of these women that went to get the abortion did it because they said yes to sex, even though they didn't want to, you know, that fawn response.
It's so crazy common, dude. Like I have these conversations all the time, like where I actually think rape's even more common than like what we statistically know, because like I said, when I, like there was like a moment where I knew I was raped, because of that was like when I was kind of decided I was super not going to have sex. And then there was all these other moments where I was like, damn, I really did not want to have sex. Like, and I it just happened to me. Like I was like blackout drunk or whatever. And like, I didn't count those as rape until I started to really explore it. In my ayahuasca ceremony, she was like, girl, like you were totally like raped. Like, I was like, oh my God, you're right.
Hang on one second. I think this is such an imperative part of the conversation, because when you were saying 0.1% of those were rape, I think we need to redefine even what rape is, because all of these constitute as rape. Whenever you say at the end, it's like wives or partners or whoever having sex, even though they don't want to, that's rape.
Yeah. Exactly. So I was just saying the statistics of the, not the CDC, but the official statistics right now, it's 0.1%. And I don't believe that that's true, because I think that there's way more rape happening, and martial rape, like within, or marital, I think it's called, you know, within the marriage, within a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
My mom told me from my ancestral lineage, from my dad's side, the women would have 5, 6, 7 kids, and then would die in childbirth, a lot of them, you know, and they just had like kids back and back and back and back until they die. And my mom, and I was saying to my mom, like, why did they do that? You know? And she's like, well, they just had to, you know, whenever the man wanted sex, they just had to give it to him. And that's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even a conversation about, no, we're not going to have sex within this week because I'm fertile, or even, you know, a few days before and after to be sure. But it was like, nope, man wants sex. Okay. I'm opening myself up to it. And that's just what it is. And I have to be a good wife, and I don't want to say no. I don't want to be a bitch, you know, like you were saying, or, you know, that's my duty, or if I don't do that, would he cheat on me? Or if I don't do that, would he still love me? You know, all these guilt and shame and blame that is surrounding women, that needs to all be dissolved.
Yeah.
So we can be fully embodied in our sexuality and liberated in our sexuality. And one of the biggest pieces of sexual liberation for myself was to say no, to fully say no to it. Because what I've realized, and I have strong Scorpio in my chart, not as strong as your stelliums, but I have strong Scorpio as well with my moon and Pluto and Mercury and Lilith and Vesta in my house of Scorpio and South Node. And so I've had that too, where I had that fawn response a lot in my life. And I didn't even realize that. I just realized it afterwards, where I was like, you know what? I didn't actually want to have physical intercourse. How did that just happen? But I love my partner, you know, and I wanted to please him. And but I wasn't actually ready. I wasn't actually, my yoni actually didn't want it. It was more my mind that wanted to be, you know, oh, we're starting. Oh, it's going well. Like, I'm just going to keep on going because that's like the natural progression of, you know, whatever kissing or foreplay, even that we call it foreplay. Like, what is it playing forward? You know, what is it's in front of, okay, the main act that needs to be physical intercourse, which is the end of it that we're all moving towards. And when I realized, because of what happened in my own life with, you know, giving birth to my children, and actually after the birth of my first child, I tore a little bit. And that piece actually made me realize, oh, it was like my yoni had a voice then, you know, and he was like, you know what? No, that hurts. We're not going to do that. And that was the first time where I was like, you know what? I'm really going to listen to my yoni now, because I had to, you know what I mean? And before it was like, my mind was so much stronger and, you know, or I was, you know, it was sexy, it was hot, whatever. And I would just like do it because it was fun in the moment, but it wasn't actually my yoni really truly opened and wanting it, you know what I mean? And I didn't realize that until later on, how often I put myself into those situations. And yeah, my biggest sexual liberation was to say no and to not feel guilty about it, and to say no. But we can't just do all the ever juicy things that we can do without the physical intercourse. And it's been so deeply healing for me to do this within my marriage. Just really knowing and also, you know, teaching my husband, quote unquote, that it's okay to not have physical intercourse, and it's not the end result. And we can really enjoy the other pieces of sexual energy exchange, of synchronized energy exchange in intimacy in so many different aspects. And I feel like when we teach more of that, then more women feel more empowered to say no and still have fun in a bedroom and anywhere else.
Can I interject here?
Yes, please. Yes.
I really like what you're saying, because it kind of illustrates this really big point that if you don't learn to speak up for your pussy, she will make you listen. She will, like, and that's, for me, that's actually why I think I had vaginismus, because like my yoni was like, hey, what the fuck, man? Like, we gotta like tap in here like really deep. Because I had vaginismus, I had to give my yoni, I had a daily devotion to my pussy, like daily devotion of like yoni steaming, of looking at her, of like showing her she's safe. And like I had so much devotion to that. And
when did that happen for you? Was that after the sex part?
Yeah, it was. It was actually like, it was, oh my gosh, this kind of, I'm not like fully ready to share like all the details about this publicly, but I had a memory come up from my childhood during EFT. It was like, I had gotten really into self-help. I'd also like been homeless a lot during this period after I quit stripping, because like I didn't have the same amount of money. And so I was like very ungrounded. And then I was like really like, damn, I've got to get my money shit together. Like, I want to like hire a mentor and blah, blah, blah. So I hired my first mentor, or I like joined her group program, and it was EFT, emotional freedom technique, or tapping, or whatever. And during that, I like really uncovered this like super deep trauma. And I was like, oh. And like, when I did that, it was like, my body was like, ugh, like, just like, sorry for the sound effects. I know it's probably loud, but yeah, my whole body was just like shut down. And then it was actually like kind of manifesting as vaginal cancer. And I was like super freaked out by it, like going to all these like shamans and ceremonies of just being like, oh my God, help me heal this. And that's when I took back my name, Peyton. So I was going by Aurora for a while. And I took the name Aurora after getting raped in my first ayahuasca ceremony, because like CSI or the crime scene people were like, hey, we're starting an investigation, so you can choose a different name so people don't know it's you. So I chose the name Aurora. And where was I going with that? I had a total point to that.
Yeah, with you when it happened that the yoni
really my yoni was just like, oh god, and like it was just like so then I had to like really like learn how to like tune into her, and it sucked, dude. It sucked because I didn't have solutions for the longest time. I would be like in so much pain that I would just like wake up and be in the fetal position and like not want to move, like my pussy hurts so much. Like it took so long for me to have like the actual tools, like, and I think it wasn't actually until like COVID hit and then I got stimulus checks and stuff and unemployment, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna buy this like course and I'm gonna heal my pussy and I'm gonna get this wand and this egg and all these things I've been wanting. I literally just like invested so much money in healing myself. All the money I ever got from the government when all that happened, like I just invested in coaching and healers, like taking care of my body. Like I just like deeply invested in my like my healing. So I was like, I gotta heal this.
Mm-hmm. I feel like those stimulus checks really did that for a lot of people. It really provided them a lot of extra income that they had then to dispose for things that they maybe wouldn't be able to do if they were just earning the money at a normal pace that they were used to.
It helped me so much. But yeah, that was from the period of like 2019, I'd say like well into 2020. I mean, honestly, I'm still healing some stuff in my yoni. Like I still have like a little lump in my yoni from where all that happened, but it's not cancerous. And I had it checked out a whole bunch because I was super freaked out by it. I was like, oh my god.
And you know, the membership that you could just one more that membership that you were mentioning, that was the Golden Yoni membership,
yes, right? By that Rose was Davies. Yeah, I did that, and I did Viva La Vagina by Courtney Davis, which I don't know if y'all know her work, but y'all would totally vibe. Like yeah, she had this whole thing. And I also took I did some work with Amber Leitz, who's like a erotic blueprint coach. I took a course from her. I did a lot. And one of my mentors, Electra Moon, who I mentioned does the Shibari healing, I feel like she's been like a really big part of my healing journey. And like she even gave me like a yoni massage. And, there's so many healers and so many people who have like helped me. And so
it's so beautiful. Like we went to Spirit Weavers and I got a I always say it the wrong way. Me as a German. Iorola.
Oh, Areola.
Areola.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's like basically your the ring around your nipples. Areola.
Yeah.
But it's like an areola massage that they give, but also like for the lymphatic system. And it was so nice. And I was thinking, it's just like, it could be like so sexualized, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't at all. Like it was like just like, it's just so sacred. And like, you're like really releasing anything that's stuck up here. And she showed me like how to massage my breasts and how important it is to regularly massage the breasts. And I got this really beautiful oil that she created for it. That like helps like any lymphatic or cysts, or even like to detect any cancer potentially, you know, any growths in your breasts. And I think if we as women learn how to do that, to massage ourselves and our sexual organs on a regular basis, then we also like we can detect a lot of things that are not right through that. And we're not so dependent on the medical system telling us when, you know, having to go to like regular tests Which is, you know, fine to do that. But also at the same time, we can actually test ourselves in a lot of ways. And when we connect more with our body, we actually feel that something is off.
Yeah, that's so on point, especially with everything that's happening right now. Like, I know so many people are really freaked out by the Roe versus Wade. And you've already kind of touched on this a little bit. But yeah, there's definitely like, there's so much medicine available to us that has nothing to do with the medical system. I'm like, kind of like, I don't go to an actual doctor unless like I really, really have to, which for like years, I haven't. Like, the only time was like to like really make sure it wasn't like cancerous and stuff.
Yeah. There's a time and place for the Western medical system for like accidents and emergencies. It's great. But for like prevention and healing, it's not.
Yeah, it's totally not. Yeah, actually, my roommate has cancer right now. And like, dude, like the foods they give him to eat, like, dude, I just can't even believe it. It's like, y'all want him to get better? Like, it's so crazy. It's junk food. It's literal junk food. And I'm like, this feeds the cancer. Like, it's like such a, anyway.
No, I feel you.
I'm like, it makes me crazy.
So in April, I had, we discovered that I had an ectopic pregnancy and I had to go to the ER, and it had been so long since I had been in a hospital, and being in the ER waiting room, there's like, you know, two vending machines and one's just full of soda. And there's like two rows at the very bottom on the right that have water. And then there's an ice cream machine right next to it. I was like, it's like, is this actually a joke? And it's just so interesting because it's become so normalized, like having these convenience foods and going into gas stations. And even yesterday, I don't really go to like regular grocery stores.
I don't very either. Much.
And I was inside of a Smith's yesterday and I was like thinking to myself, I was like, what does anyone actually need in here? Just the produce section and like grains and whole foods, like 80, 95% of the grocery store. It's like all this is full of garbage ingredients and garbage processes that your body is having such a hard time digesting. And then we wonder what, or if, I don't know if the people that shop there do wonder about this stuff, but they should start wondering why cancer is so much more prevalent as the years go on.
Yeah. And just all the radiation or 5G and all the internet and Bluetooth and all that stuff. I think that also is like a big factor.
So many aspects of.
Yeah, but like it's so freaky to go like a normal grocery store. I'm the same way. I like go to the health food store and I'm like there's a whole aisle soda, a whole big long aisle.
You know,
crazy.
I feel like a lot of people don't even know as much too, because I can hear people that go to quote unquote normal grocery stores being like, these privileged women or whatever, but. I feel like a lot of people just don't even know that there are grocery stores that are working with farms that are providing the produce at lesser prices. And it's actually less expensive to eat better at different grocery stores. And I'll go to Albertsons or Smith's when I have to get some piece of organic produce. And the price is through the roof. It's so much more expensive than at, like, we have Sprouts here in Las Vegas. And I think on the West Coast. And it's so much cheaper there. I get my produce at Sprouts. Mm-hmm. I get some of the processed or pre-made stuff at Trader Joe's. It's like a whole system thing, but that's a whole other thing about the convenience, because a lot of people only quote unquote have time to go to one grocery store or the other. So it's like something that we wind up settling for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that comes down to priorities, because even when I was like fucking living in my car, I ate all organic. All my money went to food. Like because that really matters to me. So if it really matters to you, the convenience of it, you'll find a way. It's like, y'all know how powerful that is. That energy. It's like if someone wants to have sex and like with their partner and stuff, they will drive across town. They will meet in the park, whatever. Like, you know, they'll find a way. Like you make time, you make energy for what's important to you. So
yeah. And I love that.
Matters, find a way.
I love that. I love how you share that story with us. Like, you were homeless, you were moving through all these traumas that could be, and for a lot of people would be like, well, I don't have the money right now, or I can't invest in healing or in coaches or in mentors. Like, I gotta figure out, you know, other things that are more important, that are more mundane, whatever. But I love that you went into like, no, one of the best investments that I can really make is in my health, is in my own healing, is in mm-hmm. myself. Because from that on, you are creating your own business.
Yeah.
You know, because of what you've been through and because of the mentors and the education that you received and the healing, now you can go into, and I would love for you to share more about what you do now to help women heal their own traumas as well. And especially in regards of sexuality and in regards to, you know, embodying their inner bitch.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was going to say something about that. Give me a moment. I was just thinking about just how important it was for me to like know that, yeah, I could like buy all these things and I could probably like pay rent and like go somewhere. At a time, there was a shift at the time where I was like, okay, like now you really need a house and stuff. But like I had my first one-on-one coach during a homeless period where I was homeless from like January until like mid or late summer of 2019. And that's when I had my first one-on-one coach after like the EFT program. I was like, okay, now I need like one-on-one help. Like I really need someone to just hold space for me. Cause like, I literally knew that if I didn't have like someone to help me, that I would just like keep staying in this pattern. Like I would just keep looping through it. There was just like, I was so stuck in it. Like I had like dealt with homeless like so many times and like just dealt with like scarcity and shit. I was like, dude, someone's got to help me get over my shit, man. Like someone's got to like hold me accountable or something. Like I need some like real perspective over here. Cause what I'm doing is not working for me. So yeah, I would say that what like investing in people is the best decision I ever made for myself because it shortcuts the time and it helps me get, you know, they help me see what I can't. And like a one-on-one coach, I mean, if they're good, I guess, I don't know, they're not going to like take your shit. They're going to like help you like get over it and like not going to coddle you. Maybe some will, I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, it feels like, yeah, I'm like coddling matters sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah. And it ultimately comes down to which coach do you resonate with?
Yeah. I needed someone who was going to like, you know, help me get over my shit. Basically. I was like, dude.
Yeah. Alyssa Nubriga, we had her on the Sacred Sister podcast too. She's a business coach and she helps. She has a certification program for coaches to become, you know, professional coaches. And mm-hmm. she always says there are some clients that need fire and others need water.
Oh, that totally makes sense. That totally makes sense.
And then you're
I need fire.
You need fire.
I'm all water. You saw that Scorpio ass. But I feel like Scorpio is kind of fiery. I don't know. Anyway.
Intense. Definitely intense.
Yeah.
I think that's why a lot of people assume that Scorpio is a fire sign. And they're really, really surprised to find out that it's a water sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Scorpio's traditional ruler is Mars, which is a fire planet.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And its modern ruler is Pluto.
Yeah,
Scorpio is ruled by Mars and Pluto. Scorpio is actually, you know, how Aries is very powerful and it's like fire and leadership in that sense.
Yeah.
Scorpio, like Aries is more outwardly in that leadership and Scorpio is that inner leadership of like, you got the inner power. And this is where the magnetism comes in and like attracting people and having people do what you need them to do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. My numbers also.
That can be a shadow too of Scorpio to go into manipulation.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you know, Scorpio is able to transform and alchemize and feel energies and help people shift their energies.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about your work. What do you do? What do you offer? Now that you've like moved through all the healing piece and, you know, you call yourself a sensual artistry priestess,
Yeah, so a lot of my work is rooted in the arts. I'm a visionary artist, photographer, artist of all the ways, multidimensional, I guess you could say. But I have a few different ways that I like to work with people. Photography is a beautiful way. I like to bring in ceremonial aspects, like help women get into their super safe, empowered, sexy. We do like embodiment, cacao. I create these like beautiful sets for them. Like it's a very slow process because that's been such a healing part for me. So instead of like throwing people in and be like, hey, here. And you're like, oh my God, I feel awkward in front of the camera. Like we take time to like really get comfortable. And so that's something I offer. And then I have a few courses I've created with painting and opening up to clairvoyance. My most recent one, which is still enrolling and it's kind of transforming to like more of a membership vibe. I did run a live round of it and it's called the Pussy Portal. So we go through the journey I went through. A little bit of like embodiment. So like the first half of it's kind of like focused on embodiment and like creating that kind of space for your pussy to open up to you. And then we go into the visionary art aspect and we paint a portrait of our yoni. And we not only paint a portrait, but we open up to receiving guidance through this process. So like you're seeing her intimately and you're connecting to divine frequencies, source, whatever you want to call it, we're connecting to the angelic realms and we're learning to receive guidance. So maybe that comes as a form of totems, but, or whatever, it's whatever your heavenly portal is. It's like each one is so different. And it's been so cool to see all the different pussy portals and all the different vibes that the girls bring. Cause I'm like, wow, your heaven's totally different than my heaven. It's really cool. It's magical. And, so that's now we're going to start doing monthly live calls and paint jams so you can come in, ask questions. Mm-hmm. I studied figure drawing and like very intensively since 2013. I'm like, how many years is that?
Nine.
Holy shit. Whoa. Okay. I didn't realize that. Thank you. I'm really good at figure drawing and helping people do that with like portraits and all that. I've also been doing branding. I'm a man, Jen. I don't know if y'all know. So like,
oh yeah,
both man and Jen too. I have like my whole scale. I'm like, here's everything I offer. It's like, but it's all under the umbrella of like the healing art. And so I've been doing brand design and like helping like the ecstatic dance community here, like get some more graphics going on for their stuff. And I also work with women one-on-one. And the current program I'm offering for one-on-one is the Sensual Artistry Embodiment. So it's just one-on-one help with this whole sexual healing journey, but not only your sexual healing journey, like your journey of like expression and like just your expression in general, how you are in the world and how you reveal yourself and how you can bring your sensuality and your magic into it in your own way. So those are some of my offerings. Thanks.
That's so beautiful. And we didn't touch on it in the intro, but you're a brilliant artist. You're a brilliant, brilliant painter. And a lot of people can witness your works on your Instagram. I know that you share some of your artwork there. That's such a huge aspect that I want to touch on because it's not so often that you really meet someone that's in this coaching realm and industry. And then also really, really, really devoted to a specific artistic medium that they also showcase and it is another facet of their business. And I love that about you. I love that about your Manny Jen expression. And then your Gemini IC too. And I feel like that.
A what?
Gemini IC.
What's that?
So the midheaven and IC, if the ACDC is the equator here, the meridian is the midheaven in the IC. So if I always like describing it as if we're the midheaven is the way that we want to be perceived in the world, how we go about attaining our goals, especially in terms of vocation and our career, like our public image, then going in the opposite pole, the IC brings us into the deepest, innermost seed core of our being.
So this Gemini aspect inside of yourself, for me, it says you're just really, really comfortable having a lot of different, different interests and different, different ways of really, like leaning into what you want to express of yourself and learn in yourself. And it just seems like a really natural piece for you.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
I love that your pussy portal. That sounds so much fun. Like even just like coming together with women and drawing. I've never drawn my pussy.
Or painting it.
Oh, painting. Yeah.
Yeah. Cooler. Girl, come on in. It's such a magic place. I put so much energy to it. It was like so much work for me. Oh yeah. I also got like really into videography this year. It's another thing I'm like really into. I feel like I really had to like cultivate that so much for the pussy portal. It was a whole ass thing. So this is really good. It kind of made me feel like I should write a book or something. Cause there was like so much about my sexual healing journey that I was like, whoa, I didn't even like piece in the sound healing or like the throat connection and all this. There's so much to it. Like it's so vast. It's like huge. Just keep going in there forever.
If you could go back in time to when you were a sex worker, what would you say to yourself?
Girl, I would give myself like some kind of money magnetism tools or something to like, okay, if you're gonna do this, like let's do it right. Like yeah, I feel like I would like really want to like somehow give myself access to like some money healing from the beginning. Like I think that would be so cool if I could have known to save my money, if like I could have like, you know, known that these material objects weren't going to fill the void and that there's so much I could benefit from if I would have like been able to give myself like any tool basically, but like money healing tools would have been dope.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's another massive topic that's swirling in the collective for so many young entrepreneur types or just people that are, yeah, wanting to have a deeper relationship with wealth that's not just in the financial perspective, that really wants to experience abundance as so much more than just financial. And just to let everyone here know too, if you're listening and you're like, oh my gosh, I need that for myself too. If you haven't already listened, in season 5, we have 2 beautiful episodes. One was with Andrea Franco, that's called Abundant Queen. And we talked about how self-investment helped her go from like however much in debt into millions now in her company. And same thing with Victoria Washington. We featured her. She's a money medicine woman. And we featured her in a really, really beautiful episode on wealth embodiment in season 5 as well. Both of those are fire.
Wow. Those episodes. So juicy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Peyton. That was so beautiful. Thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing your story and how you've come to really own your past. And I feel like that's something quite recently kind of that you felt into that more, right? That you like really said, this is who I am.
Yeah. It's been a journey.
Yeah.
I came out like 3 years ago. That the live y'all watch was from 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What made you, when was the time where you were like, I'm going to fully own it now?
It was actually that one-on-one mentor I was telling you about. We were talking about it and she challenged me to share. Mm-hmm. And I think I had kind of like baby stepped it a little bit. Like I would tell like a close friend or something, like, yeah, I used to have sex for money. And then, you know, they wouldn't judge me or anything. They were just kind of like, oh, wow, what was that like? Like, like, and I'd be like, oh, wow, cool. So anyone I've ever told, like, has been totally okay with it. No one's ever judged me. No one's ever, like, maybe they have, but I don't know. Like, I feel like for the most part, every time I've ever shared it, people have been really supportive. And in fact, like a lot of women have like been like, oh my God, me too. Like, I'm so glad you spoke because now I feel so seen and blah, blah, blah. Like so many women have done sex work. So
There's something so unique and so powerful and so strengthening about these types of just like taking, for lack of a better term, taking all your clothes off and just revealing yourself and bearing it all and being so raw that it pierces through perceptions that people might have about, you know, who works in that industry and, you know, having an image over like who the people are. I would imagine I would never guess that of you, you know, just looking from the outside, looking in. And I think it's so important for us here now in the age of Aquarius to really just own our fucking shit, own our stories, really just own who we are and unapologetically be sharing to our heart's content. It's not always going to look the same. I love how you were saying, you know, before sharing online to whoever is going to come across it, you know, starting slow and knowing that you can just owning it in yourself and then having the confidence and the courage to start just, you know, owning it to different people that you're close with is so, so commendable and so admirable. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me here. It's been so nice to talk to you guys and see y'all in y'all's environments.
Yes. And you know, now we are nearing the end of the episode and we have three sacred questions that we ask each and every guest that graces the stage of Sacred Sister Podcast. And these can be answered in a shorter format. Really, it's just whatever rises to the surface.
Okay,
so the first question is, what does sacred mean to you?
Sacred, I'm like sanctified, but that's the same word. Give me a second.
Whatever rises. Yeah. Take a second. Breathe into it.
It's like something to be treasured and honored, revered. Yeah.
Oh, Hannah, it looks like your mic is off.
Who is a sacred sister to you? And what does it mean to have a sacred sister?
Like name them?
If whatever rises.
Oh man, my girl Zia, I love you, girl. She is my ride or fly. We talk on the phone all the time. We process things together. We hold each other. We kind of share what we're going through. We seem to like be riding that wave together. Like we seem to be going through very similar realizations at the same time. She's very like open to the wholeness of me, which makes me feel really safe. And yeah, it's really empowering. It's like, yeah, you got that shadow girl. I see that. That's great. Like, and it's like, yeah, you got the light too. So it's very full spectrum. It feels very whole, wholesome. Yeah.
So beautiful. And then the last question is, how do you turn something normal or mundane into something magical or sacred?
Oh, this is like, I feel like just bringing art into it, like bringing your artistry. So if you're going to cook food, like maybe just putting on some candles and some music and just like how much art can you put into that moment and like how much intention and prayer, even like I'm very into praying, like kind of your prayers, like more than just like words, it's like an embodiment. So embody your prayers.
Love that. Beautiful. How much art can you bring into it? Oh, love that.
I know. As you were saying that, I was like, well, you bring in a lot of art. I counted 9 pieces of art just in the camera view that we could see.
Oh my God. It's like, so I'm like swarmed by it right now. Like, well, I need to like move on from, I think, a lot of my old art. So I'm like wanting to sell all this right now.
You know, I feel like it's a really beautiful piece to touch on because It's like a lot of people, if they don't consider themselves or if they haven't awakened or activated the fact that they are a creative spirit and that they are an artist, that they are an artist, if they claim it, they can put a lot of art appreciation outside of themselves, even with things like even just listening to music. Tons of people don't like listening to music. They don't have artists that they really like, or, you know, even just visual art, not really so much of a connection or appreciation. Same thing with songs, same thing with dance. It's like, unless it has some, you know, value that can be measured, some people just don't really have it in their lives. And I think this conversation has definitely brought to the forefront how beautiful an aspect artistry plays in one's life, especially as a creative being like yourself.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, like, art is our history. It's everything. Like, it's the room you're in. It's the computer you're sitting at. Like, all of this was like a form of art that, mm-hmm. like, at some point it was just an idea, like an idea that someone brought down here. Like, every single thing, like the lamp, the plants, mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah. And you're here to empower the feminine, and art is such a beautiful piece of the feminine energy. When you have art on one hand and then science on the other hand, and we've come from this, you know, society where the science is now seen as God almost, you know, that is like the main thing. You always have to go back to science. And even in schools, a lot of art is taken out of schools, and it's just really focused on academics and science. And now this other movement is happening, you know, that is bringing art back into our life, back into the heart. That is where art comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And just, yeah, really letting everyone know who's listening, allow yourself to bring more art into your life. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna like really ask myself that question from now on. I'm like, how can I bring more art into this moment right now?
Mm-hmm. It's also like, it's your womb energy. Since we're all going through all this womb healing, like, just know, like, your creative energy is from the womb. Mm-hmm. And like, if you're feeling stagnant, dude, you should just go make some ugly art. Like, it doesn't have to be pretty. Like, you can just make some garbage.
Best piece of advice ever. It's like, yeah, that usually is what stops people from creating art, because it's not going to be good. I experience this all the time. We do a community canvas at this downtempo music event that my husband puts on. And 90% of the people that I invite to paint on the canvas are like, oh, I can't, I'll mess it up. Or, you know, then we get to talking and they haven't picked up a paintbrush since second grade. You know, it's like, you don't even know how much fun you could be having if you just gave yourself some leeway and tempered the perfectionistic mindset that is fraught in so many of our minds, and just let yourself make some ugly art.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my gosh. I love that. Mm-hmm. Ugly art. And it's so funny because some of the pieces are actually like selling for a lot of money too, what you would maybe think of ugly art, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, it's just about embodying it, just owning it.
Yes.
Owning the art.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Oh, Peyton, it's been so, so beautiful. Obviously we could stay here all day.
I know. I'm like, there's so much I keep wanting to say. And I'm like, no.
No, I know. That's okay. This is the beginning of a deep connection that all three of us sisters have. And we want to thank every single beautiful being who's here at the end of the episode with us. Thank you so much for joining us today. We hope this has been enlightening for you. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Thank you so much, beloved. And I hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you for coming, Peyton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode today, beloved. If it resonated with you, we ask you to please share it with your sacred sisters, brothers, and beings alike. You have no idea the impact a simple share can make in someone's day, life, and growth.
And another way to show your love and support is by leaving us a rating or review on the app you're tuning into this from.
And if you hang out on Instagram and your feed is in need of more uplifting and conscious spiritual content, follow us at Sacred Sister Podcast. So with that being said, we hope you have a wonderful day and we'll see you in the next episode.
Namaste, beloved. Bye.